So, Vayitain el Moshe, kechaloso lidaber ito. So there really are two Har Sinais. The first Har Sinai we all know about, Har Sinai Hashan Kulo, V'chol Ha'am Ro'im Hakolos. But we don't really hear about how to study Torah. We just see a lot of the experience. The kolos, the vakim, the smoke, the fear, the distance. Obviously, this is a quieter Har Sinai. It's always good to be quieter. I talked a little bit this morning in the Chassidus Chug, the Chazal say, Yafa Koach Hatznius, that the first Har Sinai was very loud and grandiose, and this Har Sinai was very quiet and individual. Yafa Koach Hatznius. Just because it's such an important message, I'll repeat it. So I apologize to Alicia and Jason because they heard it 12 hours ago. But Tznius is not a women's issue. Tznius is an Avodas Hashem issue. Tznius means you do not try to draw attention to yourself unless there's some purpose. If I have to stand and give everyone instructions on how to use a light preserver, I want to draw attention to myself. How to learn a Gemara, I want to draw attention to myself. But just to have people look at me so that I get noticed. The Facebook generation, I got a like. People notice me. Notice self-promotional. They got that people are noticing me. First of all, it's addictive. It's just really a bad way to lead your life. And once you fall down that slope, you become a slave. Let me close the door. You become a slave to public opinion, and you act based on approval, not based on conviction. So it's really important not to care what people think about you. Now, it doesn't mean that you are standoffish and rebellious and rude to people, but to have deep convictions and to do what's right, and not necessarily because people will applaud you. It's a really important way to lead your life, but also it's part of being an Oved Hashem. Think about Tznius in the following way. If so-and-so were in the room, who you respect very, very much, the person you respect the most, after me, let's say, if so-and-so were in the room, how would that force you to curtail your behavior? So I always thought about it in terms of Rav Aaron, Zichron and Levracha. If he were in the room, I just felt like he was in the room. I didn't act I wouldn't act in certain ways. I was just in deference to him, in being humbled by his presence. Not that I'd get in trouble, not that he would think less kindly. It wasn't a high school, oh, he's gonna punish me, or he's gonna look at me in a certain way. I felt restrained. I felt like I didn't want to be on display because there was someone so much greater than me that would be cheap. It would be inauthentic for me to draw attention to myself away from Rav Lichtenstein. So imagine that infinitely folded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that if Hashem's, so to speak, in the room, you have that kesher, you're not trying to get people to look at you, you're not exhibitionist, you're not... Now, with women, one of the manifestations is dress, because a woman's female form, Kodesh Baruch Hu made that form attractive in a way that a male form is not attractive. So for a woman, just be careful that her beauty is not something that magnetizes or draws people to look at her inappropriately. But it's nothing to do, or it's not about only dress, it's also about disposition. And since it's about disposition, it's also about men as well. And it's really, really important because almost every issue, in a general sense, the word women's issues should be taken out of your vernacular. The last I checked, we're all living together. So whatever issues we're facing about the role of women in our society is an issue that affects, in Mitzvah Hashem, your wife and your daughters and the people you have relationships with and interact with. Am I calling it, not that it's sexist, Chas V'Shalom, but it doesn't capture it's an issue that we're facing. Our society is constantly evolving. We're protecting our Masara as desperately as we can, but we're trying to preserve our Masara. Alicia, it's still like rappers on the floor. Trying to preserve our Masara while still updating it to changes in our society. And that's a common enterprise. That's a common challenge we're all, which is, I don't like to be mezuzah. It's a common enterprise we're all facing. So this is a very, very quiet Har Sinai. There's no Kolos of Rakim, it's just Moshe Rabbeinu. But what we do see is we have psukim and words that tell us about the experience of Talmud Torah. In Parshas Yisro, we don't really see. We see the word Nasa V'Nishma, that's iconic. Thanks, Alicia. And it speaks about the relationship between obedience and understanding. But in Parshas Ki Tisa, there are two psukim which have a lot of interesting words that Chazal draw drashos about to help us understand our relationship with Talmud Torah. So that's our conversation tonight. Our relationship with Talmud Torah, it's a really good, timely issue. It's the end of the Zman. Hopefully next Zman we'll have one yeshiva, tear down the walls, and we'll all be sitting next to one another. But it's a good time, cheshbon nefesh, just like you do a cheshbon nefesh. You should do a cheshbon nefesh from time to time. How are you doing in this area? I know that every Friday night during Kabbalah Shabbos, I think about certain parts of my life. How did I do that week? Because otherwise the weeks just become months and the months become years, and then you just lose track. The train just rolls on its own engine or its own momentum. And you want to think about your life and inspect your life and catch yourself and prevent ruts. So it's a good time to think about your relationship with Talmud Torah. Vayitain el Moshe ki chaloso. So Chazal, first of all, darshan the word vayitain to Medrash, and then we'll look at their drasha for the word chaloso. Vayitain el Moshe, source base. Amar Rabbi Avo. Rabbi Avo lived in Caesarea, when Caesarea became the hub of the Roman influence. The Romans established their seat of power in Caesarea. Has anyone been to Caesarea this year? A little bit? Okay. Maybe we'll go over Pesach. That's a beautiful, beautiful lagoon and a beautiful area. I'm sure you've been to Caesarea, to the Chof HaKshatot. Okay. Amar Rabbi Avo. Kol mem yom sha'asa Moshe lamala hayalamei Torah v'shocheach. Can you imagine that? Moshe spent 40 days, 40 nights fasting, which I don't even know how to wrap my head around it. Evidently, you can, lechem lo achalti, mayim lo shatiti, so there's probably some supernatural assistance. How could you not drink even liquids for 40 days and 40 nights? But Moshe reached that supernatural level. The pasuk is not a, it's mamash a pasuk, lechem lo achalti, mayim lo shatiti, and he kept forgetting Torah. Amar Lehi turns to Hashem, source base, lying to Ribon Holam, Yeshli Mem Yom Ve'ini Yodea Davar. I spent 40 days, I don't know anything. Well, you can all identify with Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Well, think about, you're in the end of your first year. Are you a bigger Amharetz or a bigger Talmud Chacham than when you began? You're a bigger Amharetz, because you're more attuned to how little you know. We all face that. It's a curse, but it's a bracha. We'll talk about that a little bit later, why it's a bracha. But it's very daunting. When a person learns physics, you feel that you've learned X percent, and you still have Y percent still to cover. But the more Torah you uncover, right? I imagine now I could say this statement to everyone in this room, and you wouldn't laugh. Does anyone in this room have any doubt in their minds that I or any other Rebbe in this yeshiva could spend an entire year on three lines in Kiddushin without it getting boring? Not just to say we're covering ground, let's see another couple texts, not just to read. Literally, we could take every logical substructure of every sugya and create enough radiant hubs and enough spokes and enough that we say, how does this affect Kenyan? And how, what's his slant? And how do we read Tosos? Again, in a way that would still be meaningful, not just chewing the cud. Oh, another shiur, another shiur. We could really do that. When you think about this, the sum total of Torah, it's staggering. It's staggering. It's beyond human comprehension. Moshe just felt inadequate. And he's very frustrated by it. And sometimes Talmud Torah can be frustrating. I mean, if you're just covering pages and turning the pages, it's very rewarding because you finish a Masechta, you make a Siyum, on to the next Masechta. But we're subjecting you to can get very exasperating. But realize the exasperation is a reflection of the fact that you're wrestling with something beyond human size, beyond human dimension. And you're tasting HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. That's, you're entering Hashem's world. When you enter Hashem's world, you're always going to be overmatched. So you just want to read the Gemara, and what does the Gemara say, and art scrollize it, which Baruch Hashem, many, many people are doing today, and in Brit Hashem, many of you will do in your future in Talmud Torah. So that's it's easier psychologically. Okay, I've turned the page. I know this from the blood. I know what the Gemara is saying. But it's the tip of an iceberg, which itself is the tip of an iceberg. And plunging yourself into this deep world of Lamdos is meeting HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is meeting the Rabbanu Shalom. But it's tough, and Moshe found it tough. So what was the resolution of this dilemma, of this standstill? Amalei Ribon Masa Kadosh Baruch Hu, line number 3, Mishehishlam Mem Yom Nasan Lo Asa Kadosh Baruch Hu Asatara Matana. Hashem said, okay, you tried now. Now I'll give it to you directly. I'll implant it in you. I'll give it to you as a matana. Rabbi Soloveitchik would always quote the Medrash that every single fetus covers Kala Tara Kula during the 9-month gestation period. And then the malach comes and touches the cleft above our lips and we forget it. So the Rav asked, well, if we forget it, why study it? What's the purpose of delivering Torah and then stripping it from us? And the Rav would say, because it's still ingrained in you. You're just recovering a lost content, rather than acquiring new content. You're just recovering something you had already. It's in your system. It's innate. It's intrinsic to you. There's a famous story that happened between, not so famous, but I heard this story, between Reb Chaim Volozhiner and a colleague of his known as Reb Ephraim Zalman Margolis. I quoted the Sefer this week in my shiur. He wrote a Sefer called Beis Ephraim. He wrote a very, very beautiful Sefer called Mate Ephraim, which is quoted extensively by the Mishneh Berurah and Hilchos Yamim Noraim. So when you read the Mishneh Berurah, all sorts of minhagim and slichos and Rosh Hashanah, Hakot the Mate Ephraim, Mem Aleph, Mate Ephraim, Namagin Ephraim, Mate Ephraim, Mem Tes Aleph, I think it's this Rosh Tevas. So he was a contemporary of Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Reb Chaim Volozhiner opened the famous yeshiva of Volozhiner. 1801, 1803, Eitz HaChaim Yeshiva in Volozhiner. We are here because of Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Before Reb Chaim Volozhiner opened up Volozhiner, basically you learned in the local base medrash with whoever was available. And if you outpaced them and superseded them, you went to the next big town where you learned with bigger people. And then if you outpaced them, you went to the next town, you went to a bigger base medrash. But organized yeshiva, where people would gather from different locations proactively to learn together, that starts in the Lithuanian world more or less in 1803 as an organized process. To find something comparable, certainly in its sweep, its ultimate sweep, you'd have to go back to Spain, where the Ramban had a base medrash, or to France, where the Balei HaTosfos had these huge sprawling Batei Midrashim. This, we take it for granted as a base medrash, but the medrash was small little nooks and crannies where people gathered to learn. 10 people, 12 people, 15 people, 30 people. Now all of a sudden, Chaim Volozhiner changes history. You could say that Ashkenazic Jewry, Orthodox Ashkenazic Jewry, over the last 200 years, one of its deepest impacts has been the yeshiva movement. However you slice it, you can't avoid it. But, and I keep telling you, the Sfaradim didn't undergo that same process, and they are just a very different society, pros and cons. So Chaim Volozhiner started his yeshiva, and it was spectacularly successful. Ephraim Zalman Ephraim Margolis started his yeshiva, and evidently it didn't really take off. So Reb Chaim Volozhiner asked Reb Zalman Margolis, Reb Zalman Margolis asked Reb Chaim Volozhiner, how come your yeshiva was so successful, and my yeshiva didn't get anywhere? So Reb Chaim asked Reb Zalman, what did you do the first day that you opened your yeshiva? So Ephraim Zalman Margolis said, the first day we opened my yeshiva, we had a big simcha, we danced, we had a sudas mitzvah. It was great, it was a big simcha. Reb Chaim Volozhiner said, the first day we opened Volozhiner, Yonah, can you just shut off the heat? It's just very hard to talk. Is anyone freezing? No, we're all out, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's just hard to talk, I'm getting dry. Thanks, Yonah. Reb Chaim Volozhiner said, the first day we opened Volozhiner, we had a tiny tzibur. We all fasted and davened to Hashem that we should have siyata d'shmaya. We live in a culture of self-empowerment, of confidence, of working out our own problems, of equipping ourselves with skills. And Baruch Hashem, you have to be part, because I think it's a very empowering society. If you go back 200-300 years, I think your ancestors felt very enfeebled. They lived in a rigid world, a world without empowerment, without resources, without abilities to a degree, without as much dreams and visions. But when you start projects in this world, you have to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he'll give you a bracha, that he'll help you. Because nothing in this world will be successful without the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's called Siyata D'Shmaya, obviously, and it applies to every project we take on. And it applies to Torah as well. I can only tell you my own experience. When I'm learning a sugya, I sometimes feel as if I'm butting my head against a brick wall. So I can't get through, I can't get through, I can't see the MS, I can't see, I can't see, I can't see. And there are tactics I have to try to help myself. I take a break, I go learn something else, I think about it from a different angle. But sometimes I'm learning and I just feel as if the wall has been parted, as if the jungle has been cleared, as if I really feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu in my process. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving me Asher Bachar, Shenasa Lanu Tara's Emes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving me Tara. And I ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'sayim li'bein, v'bein al-lahavein, al-lahaskiel, l'shmoa, l'umod, l'lamayed, l'shmor, v'lasos. So this is the scene. Moshe Rabbeinu is dependent upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give him Tara. And if the challenge this year has been to try to spiritualize Talmud Torah, part of spiritualizing Talmud Torah is to try to feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu sitting, Kalam Akum Mishra Eskir Shemi, to try to feel not just the word of Hashem, as if the word of Hashem has been handed down, now we have this document and this Masara called the Dvar Hashem, and every piece of Torah we learn, we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu more. But to feel that he's part of the process, as he was part of the process with Moshe Rabbeinu. I didn't get a chance to tell you this earlier this year, but why is the burning bush so iconic? What does it represent? So what's fire? Fire, come on, all you physicists out there, what do we call fire? It's a, not a material, it's a process. What's the process called? Combustion. What's necessary for combustion? Three elements.
Oxygen.
Fuel. Energy. And something invisible called oxygen to create oxygenation. Oxidize. So what's the fuel? Wood, oil, whatever's being burnt. What's the energy? Heat, light. What's the invisible element that you can't see, but it's absolutely necessary? It's all around us. That's why you can't see it. Oxygen. Well, Torah is compared to fire. That's why Torah is Nimshal Aliyesh, Mimino Eish Das Lama. In Torah, there is energy. What's the energy? You. Your energy, your effort, your hard work, your brain, your heart. What's the fuel that's being consumed? Torah. What's the invisible element that's necessary for that match to be made? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At the snap, Am Yisrael still didn't have the Torah, so there's no combustion. Since the Torah wasn't given to Am Yisrael, so it was sustained in Ukal. There was no combustion yet. At Har Sinai, combustion started happening, and that's why there was smoke. Because now Am Yisrael had the Torah, and all three elements were merged. So little physics goes a long way in helping you understand Parsha Shmos. Because before we received the Torah, there was a fire and there was oxygenation, but nothing could be consumed yet. And now the three elements are placed together. So this is a portrait of Moshe Rabbeinu receiving the Torah as a matana from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if you're trying to, again, turn Talmud Torah into a spiritually meaningful experience, so trying to feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the process, it's really hard, obviously. Well, how do you do that? A lot of it is circular, not circular, but cyclical life. Well, if you feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's attitude. I saw my Rebbeim draw HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence from Talmud Torah. They thought they were sitting in front of the Rabbonu Shlomo and learning Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I remember hearing one of the Talmidim of Rabbi Soloveitchik. I was very close with the Rebbe, and why you tell me that when the Rav was teaching Torah, he felt like he was sitting at Har Sinai receiving it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I certainly felt that from Rav Lichtenstein, and I hope that to the degree that we're pale images of Rav Lichtenstein, I hope that you feel that we're invested enough. We're not just delivering a shiur, and we really feel as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us this masara, and we're trying as desperately as we can to transfer it to you, to embed it within you, to inspirit it within you. So that's Chazal's drasha of Vayitein al Moshe. That Moshe tries, throws up his hands, is frustrated, Hashem delivers it as a matana. Next word, Kichaloso, fascinating word. V'chikol ha-Tara lamad Moshe? Line number 4. Can Moshe really learn the whole Torah? V'lo k'siv ba-Tara arucha mini eretz, arucha me'eretz mida rachava mini yam. It's the Torah is broader than this entire world. How can one person receive all the Torah? Moshe had a notebook, and the notebook was filled with every single word. So get ready. This is a fascinating medrash. Look at this word. Ela klalim lamdo HaKadosh Baruch Hu le-Moshe. Hashem taught Moshe the klalim. Kichaloso means the klalim. Fascinating question. How do we view a chiddush? Let's say tonight, Jason, you work your tail off and you come up with a chiddush in Davar Shel Bali Olam, and you really, really work hard. Did Hashem tell that to Moshe at Har Sinai? And essentially, all of our chiddushim are just recovering the masara, whatever was forgotten. Or is the Masara fluid and dynamic? And Hashem gave Moshe klalim, parameters. And as long as you maintain integrity and fidelity to those parameters, everything you're going to develop is within the klalim. It's not as if everything you're saying is has said before. It's a fascinating question about machlokas. Is every machlokas in Shas simply because they forgot the one MS that Hashem gave them in Har Sinai? And we're just learning the wrong shitas to find the right shita, to flex our mind, to understand the logic of Gemara a little bit? Or, as I think Briskers deeply, deeply believe, and I deeply, deeply believe, is that Har Sinai Hashem told Moshe 49 different ways to achieve Tameh, and 49 different ways to achieve Tahar. And in Hashem's mind, you can have multiple truths. In the human realm, you have to make a decision. Do we treat it as Tameh? Do we treat it as Tahar? Because we can only practice one set of parameters. But in the world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's absolute truths, they can all be true. Obviously, it's hard for you to process because your mind has been created as a binary mind. Either it's on or it's off, or it's day or it's night. But when there's a machlokas, it's not there was one truth and it was forgotten, but they were all truths. And when I come up with the Chiddush, as long as I'm sticking to the patterns and the klalim that Moshe was given, so there's an important question. Let me tell you a Gemara Baal Peh that I forgot to put down in the Makaros, which is the antithesis of this Gemara. The Gemara says it's Yishalmi in Peh, I think. Rabbi Shua ben Levi writes, Rabbi Shua ben Levi said that in Har Sinai Hashem gave Moshe Medrash, Mishnah, Gemara, Agadata, Halacha. Listen to the following line. V'kol ma shetalmid vasik, asid l'chadesh. Asid l'horos, I think is the line. That makes it sound like Hashem gave Moshe everything. Tonight, Moshe, you'll come up with a chiddush. I'll give Moshe yatzach chutzlim chitzasa. Hashem told that to Moshe Rabbeinu Har Sinai. You're just recording, documenting, collecting, amassing. You're not being mechadish anything. Based on a pasuk in Kohelet, Ru Mashi Omari Ru Zechadash En Kol Chadash Tachas Hashemesh. This gives a very, very different opinion. This gives a very, very different slant that Hashem didn't tell Moshe every single statement that every single Talmud Chacham would say, but Hashem gave him the general guidelines. When I say general, I don't mean three or four guidelines. I mean three or four trillion guidelines, but Shas is so complex, and the logic of Shas is so complex, you can generate another. So, which is true? Well, I'd like to think that when a mechadish something, it's not just mouthing something that was told to Moshe Rabbeinu in Har Sinai. But the reason Rabbi Shua ben Levi said what he said, even if you feel like this matters, that Moshe Rabbeinu was just given parameters, and this is really, really important. Moshe, listen carefully, because you're going to do this tonight. Really important. And it's really at the heart of what's going on here in Yeshiva. Why do we want you to make a Chiddush? You can listen also, Jeffrey. Why do we want you to make a Chiddush? Chiddush could be very flattering. Chiddush could stroke your ego. Chiddush can make you feel accomplished. Chiddush can sometimes supplant Masar of Chazal. Oh, you know, Reb Moshe Feinstein said this, and the Shach said this, and Tosas said this, and the Rashba said this, and I said this. And it's very, very dangerous. And certain people, for that reason, are adamantly opposed to anyone being involved in that area, certainly at your age. Maybe you spend 30 years in the base matters, you write a sefer. But you're 7 months out of high school, and all of a sudden, you know, you're giving them shot in the Ritva, you're giving them shot in the Rashba. It could be very, very dangerous. It could be very, very self-serving, just as it could be very dangerous to the sense of Masar. And I have to tell you, in today's world, as far as I can tell, in many Batei Medrash, it's discouraged. I don't know if for that reason or not, but in this Beis Medrash, it's encouraged. And that's a throwback to what it was. If you go back to the yeshivas in Europe, this is a recent trend. The people are less learning lamdas and more learning halacha lemaisa, or just learning. We could talk about how the trend developed. But if you're a mechadish, are you able to say, I'm trying to build the Torah, the Masorah that was given in Har Sinai? It's not about me. It's not about giving a good chabura or having a good shiur or having that. I'm trying to either recover part of that Masorah, or I'm trying to take Moshe Rabbeinu's Masorah that Hashem gave us, Asher Nasan Lanu Taras Emes, and I'm part of that Masorah. And I'm the Talmud Vasik of that Yerushalmi. When Yishalmi says that Hashem gave Moshe, Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, Yonah Berenson is going to live one day and in 3,000 years, and he's going to work really hard on the sugya of, I don't know, on the sugya of Amigam Magam Chazaka, and he's going to come up with a Svara in Tosfos, and I'm not telling it to you necessarily, Moshe, every single Svara, but here is the system, and now I'm part of it. I'm part of the Masar. I'm not just a spectator. I'm in. I'm all in. I'm immersed in it. It's my responsibility. So Kolach HaChidish could be very, very assimilating. It helps you assimilate her into your kishkas, into your bloodstream. You're not just sitting back and learning, what did he say? What did he say? What did he say? What did he say? But it can also be very dangerous. You need to be really, really careful that when you're pursuing the sugyos that I've worked hard at, I just told the boys I was giving shir today. We came to a difficult Rashba. I told the boys in my shir, I've been living with this Rashba in my head for 33 years. I first saw this Rashba in Kiddushin when I was 1987. I was 21 years old. I didn't understand it then. I still don't understand it. I'm trying really hard. I came up with a new idea to understand it. I mean, I know it's not. I'm not the first person to discuss this Rashba. It's a famous Rashba. It's on the Chaim page. But I'm really struggling with it. And I really want to understand the emes of what the Rashba felt, because the Rashba learned Torah in ways that I'll never imagine. And if I could just get a little bit of insight into Kiyam HaDavar and Eidus L'Kiyam HaDavar through the Rashba's work, I can understand a little bit more of Taras Hashem. And I'm not necessarily just going to accept what other people greater than me have said about the Rashba, because everyone sees the Rashba differently, and I want to read the Rashba. I want to hear what they have to say, and I want to read the Rashba also as carefully as I can and understand the different ways to read the Rashba. So there's something very powerful about Koach HaChidush, but you have to make sure that the tonality is correct and the orientation is correct. And wow, it just came up. Wow, now I'm part of this Masar. One day you'll tell your son the sugya of Shlosh Yazachotzach Mechitzas, and you learn from, this is a sugya I worked on, this is a sugya. I remember a couple of months ago, the yeshiva learned the sugya of Rabbi Yochanan, Kiddush Emea Tovsinba, Mekadish Miachshu Velachalam, Miachshu Velachalam. I remember at some point I really tackled that sugya, because I realized there were very few achronim who ever tackled that sugya. And I'm really proud of that sugya, because I feel like people that are learning that sugya could go back to my article. It's written up. It's on the internet. And it's in Hebrew. And okay, that's a good starting point. I went through the Rishonim. I tried to build models based on the Rishonim of what's happening. What does it mean? Kiddushin Mea Tov Simba. So Torah is very empowering, but you have to make sure that it empowers you to feel part of the Masara and part of your Avodas Hashem, not empowering you to feel, oh my goodness, here's my Chiddush and I could be Mechadesh, or God forbid if that takes away or subverts from the placement where you are in the Masara. And that's something to be very, very sensitive to. As you're segueing, a lot of you guys are giving Chaburas now and it's Erev Pesach. Like, make this the climax of your pursuit of Dvar Hashem. That we've given you the tools, not just to organize shitos, but to actually dive into the sugya and develop ideas in the sugya. Are they going to be as highly developed as Rabbi Chanan? Never. Of course not. Why are you doing it? Because it's more personal. And when it's more personal, it becomes more part of your heart, more part of your soul. And it's part of your kinyan atara. And part of your kinyan atara, hopefully be part of your kinyan of Avodas Hashem. So even if you hold that Moshe wasn't given everything, I still think of Yeshua ben Levi's statement is, you're the Talmud Vasek. You're part of the Masara. Moshe Rabbeinu saw you, Sammy, not necessarily because everything you say Moshe Rabbeinu saw, but he saw there will be someone like you who will take his Torah and advance it, who will take his Torah and study it. And even if it doesn't have to be a major chabura, every time you study Torah, if your mind is active, oh, that's an interesting Tulsus. Never thought of it that way. Maybe he meant this. Maybe it doesn't have to be like, Lumdus is not all or nothing. Is that, oh, I'm leaving Yeshiva now, how can I prepare chaburas? It means finding yourself the same chalkeinu b'sarasecha. I'm not just going to study Torah passively, but I want to try to engage. And every time I make a chiddush, I'm investing some of myself. When I invest myself, then I bring more of my emotion to it. Okay, a lot to talk about. Let's see what. Right. Okay. Well, we'll just go in order. There's a pasuk in Kohelet, source number Gimel, that leads the Medrash in Kohelis to a statement about what happened to Moshe and what happens to all of us. So it's number Gimel. V'nasati eslibi lidrosh v'lasur b'chachma. Al kol asher nasat tachas Hashemayim. Shlomo Melech says, I scoured and I inspected everything that happens on this earth, terrestrially. V'hu inyan ra. And there's something that I can only call ra, terrible. What's this inyan ra that Shlomo felt was so terrible that he probed everything under the sky and he saw something so terrible? So the Medrash in Kohelis has different options. One option is source number Dalid, Rabbi Avoh, Amar again Rabbi Avoh, the same Rabbi Avoh from Shmos, from Medrash Rabbah. So Rabbi Avoh gave a lot of drashos about these psukim and about Moshe forgetting. Zeu shiputa shel Tara. What's so terrible? What's so frustrating? The experience of Tara. Sha'adam lamei Tara v'shechacha. You study Tara and you forget it. Really frustrating, right? How much of Kiddushin do you recall? hard. How many Tosas in? How many Ritvas? It's frustrating. I talked about the frustration before, but it's part of the territory because you're trying to tackle Ratzon Hashem. Let me tell you what Rav Lichtenstein once told us, and it's gonna, in my opinion, it's gonna blow your mind. It should blow your mind. Rav Aaron wasn't talking about forgetting, but it's really the same thing. He said, if you don't understand the Tosfos or you don't understand the Sugya, that is not an intellectual limitation. That's a moral flaw. If you really cared more, if you saw this as Devar Hashem and you saw this as eternal, and I'm sorry to quote myself, but I'm living this experience. I want to share my experiences with you. This morning, I was learning a kasha that Rav Ashi asked Rav Kahana on the Asam L'Chayim Adbeis about Eidei Kiyum. And to me, the answer is so obviously different. And I think Rav Kahana meant it. That's the way I think the Rambam read Rav Kahana. Although the postures of Rav Kahana is like the Tzos read him, and that's not the answer I would have expected. And we talked about it in Shir for an hour. And I just said, like, I want to ask Rav Kahana. Like, I can't wait to see Rav Kahana. And say, Rebbe, why did you answer that to Rav Ashi? Why did you tell that to Rav Ashi? I mean, you should have said this. It seems so much more obvious. You should have said this. Is that what you meant? Like, I interpreted you to mean that. Is that what you meant? That's really going to happen. In Olam Haba, that's really going to happen. When you get to the Beis Medrash Shemaila, no one's going to care about your profession. No one's going to care about your politics. No one's going to care about your wallet. No one's going to care about all the Maasei Adam, B'tach Bulosav, and Maasei Enosh in this world. What they will care about is, well, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes to Kiddushin, what did that reflect? And what does Eidei Kiyum reflect? And the conversations that took place in Shas will continue. And you'll be able to consult with them and say, what did you mean by that? And I hope I won't be embarrassed. I hope when I get to Shemayim, I won't be mortified. All of a sudden, everyone's talking about Devar Hashem, and I'm basically scratching the surface of Arbavas Nezikin. So do you see it as eternal, or do you see it as passing? Or one day, who's going to be a doctor here? Imagine some of you are thinking about medical school, and you'll be thinking really seriously about medical school and then medicine, and then you're sitting there and saying, my goodness, I'm going to have to practice this surgery every day of my life. I better pay attention. I better not forget arteries versus veins. I better not forget right versus left, because this is something that matters in my life, and this is something that's enduring, and you won't forget it. So obviously comprehension and retention aren't just intellectual skills. Obviously some people are gifted with retention skills, but it's a question of emotional investment. If I ask you a quick question, when's your birthday? You'll know it because it's deeply ingrained within you because it's part of your identity. Any sports nuts out there, Jason? If I ask you to tell me, you know, the score of the Super Bowl or the statistics of whatever your favorite.
I actually don't know this year.
Right, but many people can. And then you say, well, what about the Tosas I learned or the Rashba I learned when that game was played? Maybe less so. I'm talking to myself also. What do I remember? What do I forget? It's really hard. So much of Torah knowledge is, and comprehension and retention is caring and seeing it in a certain way and framing it in a certain way. So Rabbi Yavo laments forgetting. Rabbanan b'shem Rabbi Yitzchak, line number 2, Surah Dalet, l'tovaso adam lameid. No, it's good that you forget Torah. Why is it good that you forget Torah? Because if you didn't forget Torah, you'd just study it casually and cavalierly, and you'd read it and understand it and retain it and move on. And part of the appeal of Torah is that I can't tell you how excited I am to teach the third parak of Kiddushin. Why? Because the last time I taught it was, I don't know, I think maybe 20 years ago, last time we learned the second parak and the first parak, we switched Kiddushin in the middle. And now I feel like I remember learning this, and unfortunately I don't remember everything, and I'm retracing my steps, and I'm taking out my old notes from 20 years ago and 30 years ago and trying to recover as much as I can. And before computers, not so good. They got all these loose papers all over. So part of Torah is a lot of boys at the end of this month say, I'm looking back at Kiddushin and what do I have? And it's very exasperating. It depends upon your future. If this is one and done, when you leave yeshiva, you'll leave your sperm behind, you give away your gemara, then lo mazal nochi, why were you here? But what do we say when we finish a mesechta? I really plan to get back. I really plan to come. One of the boys was just asking me a similar question this week about forgetting and not knowing halacha, not knowing enough halacha. And I just said, it depends on how you see yourself. If you're in the process of trying to study Torah your whole life, or to acquire halachic knowledge, So you're in a process, you're on the road. You may not be there yet, but I hope that if I ask the following question to everyone in this room, I hope the answer is yes. Now maybe your plan for execution may be different, and maybe I don't always agree with how people budget their time and execute, but if I ask, does everyone in this room plan on being a Talmud Chacham? I hope the answer is yes. I hope in your heart of hearts you really want to be a Talmud Chacham, you really want to achieve that. So some of you are saying, well, I'll do this first, and then that could be discussed, but we can't even start the conversation. We can't even be on the same grounds unless we all want to know as much Torah as we can, and we all want to feel that by studying Torah, we're granting ourselves an entree and a kesher with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So forgetting is not as devastating if it's a long-term process. If it's a short-term process, and of course, I invested all this time that I'm moving on, and what am I taking with me? But if I'm living with it, so Amir Tashem, you'll learn Kiddushin again. And I promise you, the next time you learn Kiddushin, Nasanu V'Amrahi will be a little bit more familiar. Whether it's in Daf Yomi, or whether it's in a Shir, or whether... And the next time you learn Kiddushin, when someone says Kiddushin Me'atosin, but oh, that's my... I learned that, so I remember something. The next time in the Davar Shlomo Yolam, even if it comes up in Daf Yomi, it won't be totally foreign. You say, oh, okay, I've heard of that before. And you repeat and repeat and repeat. And Baruch Hashem, you have long lives, and you'll always be invested in Torah. So it's an interesting machlokas in the Medrash and Koelis. Is it good that we forget Torah? Is it bad that we forget Torah? Rabbi Yavos said it's terrible. It's very frustrating. And it is frustrating. It's both. But the Talmidim in front of Rabbi Yitzchak said it's a good thing. Because Hashem wants us to be invested in Torah, wants us to constantly return to Talmud Torah, not abandon it. Okay? Next pasuk, just because I talked about two psukim. Next pasuk is source number two. Vayifen vayered Moshe minahar, ushnei lechos haydus biyado, luchos ksuvim mishnei avrahem, mizeo mizeim ksuvim, vahaluchos masei elukim heima. Vamichtav michtav elukim hu. Charas al aluchos. Two interesting phrases. We'll try to talk a little bit about each of them. Number one is Michtav Elokim, Maaseh Elokim. Why twice? Maaseh Elokim, Michtav Elokim. First of all, it's all redundant because we know the Luchos are written by Hashem. Second of all, even if you have to tell me Maaseh Elokim, Michtav Elokim, why twice? Once I know it's Maaseh Elokim, I know it's Michtav Elokim. So Yeshua ben Levi, I mentioned him before, source number of days. I'm Yeshua ben Levi. Bechol Yom Vayom. Just take yourself to this medrash. Close your eyes and try to think about this medrash. Baskol yotzeis mehar charev. There's a heavenly voice that swirls around wherever that mountain is in the desert. And you know what that baskol says? Oy lahem lebrios me'el bona shel Torah. It's sad that Torah is insulted. Elbone is insult. Shekol mi she'eino osek tadir batara hareza nazif la'kadosh baruch hu. Now listen carefully to what I'm about to say. If there's a constant baskol, that means that Yeshua ben Levi is talking about a condition that's ever present. It's not, oh, there's a failure. The first base I'll make, there was a total collapse. What's the total collapse? They were of the avodah zarah. What's the total collapse? They were murderers. Yeshua ben Levi says, built into human experiences that unfortunately people won't pay as much attention to Torah as they should. They'll insult Torah. Because it's hard. Because it's not obvious. Because the world magnetizes us and hypnotizes us, and there's so much in this world to pursue, and it's not so easy to study Torah. And there's a constant Elbat HaTorah that this baskol is lamenting. And it comes out every day. So when I was your age, sitting in these chairs, literally, sitting in this room, I think the same chairs. I'm going to replace the chairs. When I read this medrash, I said, you know what? In 25, 30 years, maybe this Elbon HaTorah will be a little bit remedied. Because something I thought was changing. What did I think was changing? In the 80s, all of a sudden, going to yeshiva in Israel became a mass movement. In the 70s, it was trickles. If you know people that came in the 70s, right after the Six-Day War, trickles, these people came. By the time I came to yeshiva in 1983, it was already, I don't remember, 50 guys in Gush. It was already, not as it is today, but it was already, oh, you're spending a year in Eretz Yisrael learning, 2 years in Israel even, when it wasn't as popular, second year as it is. And I said, I wonder how this phenomena of so many boys learning in yeshiva in Israel, wasn't as much with girls, but even girls, how will that affect our society when I'm an adult? Will there be a world in which people will really be koveit into Talmud Torah? Has it happened? In some ways, yes, in some ways, not. In some ways, obviously, there's more excitement than we didn't have Daf Yomi Shiurim, we didn't have certainly online Shiurim, but there's still a long way to go. And you guys are dreamers. And why are you only dreaming about the better world you can build morally and socially and politically, as I'm sure you are, and the world that you can build as a family and what type of family you want to raise, as I'm sure you are? But do you have dreams about how Torah could be bolstered in our society? Not just in the yeshiva Welt, but in the society you're going to occupy. Are you starting to envision, like, how can you make that change? And I'll be very honest, it starts at home. Let's say no one in this room is going to be a Rebbe. Let's say, for argument's sake, that's not going to happen. But you can accomplish so much by being just having this conversation the other day with someone in yeshiva, one of the boys in yeshiva. Because so much of learning and working hard is having vision of where it's all heading and where it's all landing. So I told this boy, let me give you a vision of what I'd like you to become. You're not going to become the next Rebbe Tarragon. Maybe you are. I can retire. But this is who I'd like you to become. I'd like you to become the guy in shul who's serious about tefillah and serious about halacha, who doesn't talk during davening, who has respect for Torah and people that study Torah, who everyone goes over to and asks, basic halacha. Doesn't he not a shaila about, something complicated, but he knows all the halachas and gives a shiur, the michas chinuch shiur, and you walk into, I'm serious. There's a boy coming next year. It's the fourth boy in the family. Obviously, I'm not going to say his name, and I won't embarrass him or his father. His father learned in yeshiva with me. His father is a professional who works to the bone, and he gets up every single morning at 4:30, and you walk into the house, the dining room table is sprued open with sperm, with rashbas and ritvas and gemaras and mishnebras. And I'm thinking about a specific person, but I can list maybe 10, just off the top of my fingers, 10 people that learned in Grush with me, and you walk into their home. And let me tell you, their sons are products of that. And some of them in the yeshiva. Okay, well, some of them are sons of rabbis. But you don't have to be a rabbi to be a Talmud Chacham. Flip the question around. What the person that I'm describing to you, the person in shul that you look to at some point, and you got religious inspiration from, because he was serious about Avodas Hashem, and serious about Halacha, and serious about Talmud Torah. Don't answer the question. Who was that guy? Who was that guy in your shul? And now you have a graphic, compelling image of who you can become. Oh, I want to be like that guy. And it's only one way to become it during these formative years, to really take your Talmud Torah very, very seriously. And not just how much time you spend, but how you spiritualize it, how you interpret it, how you translate it. So Yeshua Ben Levi is lamenting, but I think when he says kol yom vayom bas kol yotzes, he's talking about a reality that's always a challenge, because it's hard to learn Talmud Torah, and the world will always captivate us and will always redirect us and distract us. But you feel there's an elbow that you want to try to redress. I feel there's an elbow. I wish there could be more in our world. I wish people, I don't know, sometimes when I always have this, if I had one magic wand to wave, it would be that every single shul and every single community that you come from has a three-hour base matters Sunday morning. Why isn't that happening? Why isn't in the Young Israel of so-and-so or the shul of so-and-so, why isn't every person coming and committing 3 hours on a Sunday morning to Talmud Torah? Because Sunday's a gift. We don't have Sunday here in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not talking about the entire Sunday. Sunday's a 15-hour day. Take 3 hours, a fifth of the day, and then afterwards, sports and family and recreation and restaurant and culture. And there's an elbow on Torah. I have 10 minutes. I want to describe one of my favorite midrashim. You look back at the pasuk. The Torah talks about the Michtav Elokim Charus al Haluchos. Charus means engraved, charut, as opposed to written. Chazal sense the similarity between the word charus and the word charus, and they say something amazing. Famous Mishnah in Avos, source number Gimel. Al tikri charus el charus. Throw in an extra yod. She'ein lecha ben chorin Ela misha osek batal matar. You could call avodas Hashem many things. Many modifiers or adjectives spring to mind. It's enriching. It's rewarding. It's connecting yourself to. Why would you call religious life liberating? Why would you call yourself a ben chorin? On the surface, it's restraining. You can't eat what you want. You can't touch what you'd like. You can't behave as you'd like. You can't travel where you want. You're following a very, very elaborate and intricate system of Torah and mitzvos. So you could call it many things, but why would you? What are Chazal driving at when they want us to associate religion with liberty? What does that mean? There's something about our avodas Hashem and our way we view religion that is being tilted or redistilled by the fact that it's supposed to be the freest way to lead your life, which is an amazing concept when you think about it, because it's enigmatic. You wouldn't consider religion liberating or emancipating. So I think there are two things. Number one, most obviously, what's the cell we all inhabit? We all live in a prison whose bars are invisible. What ultimately limits human behavior? Well, I mentioned Koheles before. One word to define Koheles, mortality. You all have dreams, and I want you to dream, and you'll all make impacts on this world, and I did as well, and then we'll all pass. And in 100 years, we'll all be relegated to the annals of history. People will look up our names, will look up, but we'll all pass on this world. You can't defy death. You can't escape Malcham Avos. And it just passes and passes and passes and passes. And that's always, always haunted human beings from the days of Daedalus and Icarus to the modern era. We're trapped by the fact that we're all going to die. And death is the terminus. And we're going to pass from this world. What if it's not the end? What if there's something eternal? Well, then you're not living in a cell. You're living in what Chazal called a passageway to a palace, a troclin, and a prosdor. Because if there's no troclin, then the prosdor is really a prison cell. So what Chazal, and I didn't quote the whole Medrash, but the continuation of the Medrash, not in the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos, but the Medrash parallels the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos. Charis means charis me malacham avos, charis me misa. Doesn't mean if you study Torah, you're not going to die. As far as I know, sadly, this year, something that I live haunted by, we lost so many Talmidei Chachamim to COVID. It's hard to even process how many big Talmidei Chachamim just died, and how are we going to replace them, and who's going to replace their Torah output? But that's one meaning of Chazal. To feel that you're living in this world, but you're tasting eternity. That you're part of something larger. Life doesn't end when you pass in this world. Torah is eternal. Dvar Hashem is eternal. But that's not the only answer, because Yiddishkeit is never, and please, please record, Yiddishkeit is never a sellout of this world just because we want to get to Olam Haba. We never want to articulate Yiddishkeit that way. Okay, you have problems in this world, but it's all going to lead to Olam Haba, and then there's got to be some way to transform Avodas Hashem into something liberating, even in this world, even in our own experience. And I think a lot about when I read this Medrash, and I read this Mishnah in Perkis. Actually, you wrote my article in the newspaper this week about this, though. You can read it. I didn't mention it, but in 1958, a British philosopher gave a very impactful series of lectures, which was then recorded as a little pamphlet. And it really impacted my way of thinking about liberty. It's good to think about Erev Pesach, Chag Acheros, Man Cheresenu. This philosopher's name was Isaiah Berlin. And he, I think the original lecture was called Two Forms of Liberty, Two Liberties. And his basic brisker chakira was, you have to differentiate between what he called freedom from as opposed to freedom to. Now, he wrote it as political theory. Freedom from is what modern democracies enshrine, freedom from repression, freedom from discrimination, freedom from poverty, freedom from, as opposed to freedom to contribute to the political system, freedom to build political structures. But that phraseology really struck me. That we often think about freedom as lack of coercion, lack of restraint, lack of inhibition, total freedom of movement, total freedom to behave, total freedom to act. And I think of freedom as freedom too. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made me with such faculties and such potential and so many dreams and so many aspirations, and I want all those to lend purpose to my life, because when there's no purpose to my life, I feel empty and I feel distant and I feel cold. And when there's purpose to my life, I feel fulfilled and I feel like I'm living for a reason and I feel deeply, deeply gratified. And then there's this lesser version of myself, my urges, my desires, my pettinesses, my weaknesses. And that other self threatens. If I give in to my urges and my pettiness and my weaknesses, then I won't reach those dreams and I won't be productive. And I know myself. I know when I fail and I cave to my weaker side, I feel terrible about it. Because I, not just when I sin, but when I don't produce those dreams, I don't fulfill those dreams as best as I can, it frustrates me. I feel like, what's my purpose? Time is just marching on and I'm not moving forward. I'm not creating. I'm not contributing. And it's a terrible feeling. And I don't want that lesser part of me to dominate the real me that I want. Namaskar Tadala. Okay, whatever. I don't want that lesser part of me to dominate the better version of me that can be so productive. And I really believe that Hashem's system of Torah and Halacha unlocks the better me and frees me too. Not just, it may not free me from, it imposes, it encroaches upon my freedom from, to amplify my freedom too. It tells me, okay, you have a sexual urge and it's a beautiful gift Hashem gave you. This is how to use it. Because if you abuse it, then you may have more freedom from, but less freedom too. And these are the midos that are very powerful within you, ego and indignance and drive. But if they are taken too far, then they'll consume you. So curtail your freedom from in order to augment your freedom too. And when you eat, eat in this way, or when you fast, fast this way, or don't work 6 days, work 6 days a week and then stop on the seventh day. My goodness, on the seventh day I'm handcuffed. I can't work. I can't. Yeah, but I believe that gives me greater freedom. And I really see Yiddishkeit, I really see Avodas Hashem as liberating me. But not liberating me by unleashing my, just can someone close the door, Moshe, by removing all restraints. Sadly, I think in our modern world, we know what the end game of ultimate freedom is. Especially in the last 100 years, where there's been a tendency or trend towards ultimate experience and ultimate exploration, and not indulgence in a hedonistic sense, but no restraints and no traps and no limitations. I think addiction has really flared beyond control, because addiction is the radicalization of freedom. We're just free to try everything and free to engage in everything. And sadly enough, the addict is the biggest slave. He has no control of his time, no control of his hormones, no control of his decisions. You're just addicted. And we have hardcore addictions, alcohol, drugs, gambling, sexuality, violence. And then there's more subtle addictions. We're addicted to experiences or addicted to certain responses. And if you're really free, then you're not operating under the influence of anything external. You're free to make decisions. You're free to respond proportionally and specifically and case context specific. Not. So that essay really hit me hard. Again, he wrote it within a political context. He was more discussing political theory. But that phraseology really helped me understand how have you, do I feel myself? Do I feel that I'm a Ben Choron? Absolutely. Am I going to behave as I choose tonight? Absolutely not. I'm hopefully going to dive in my arvel, hopefully bench, I'll hopefully eat only certain foods, and I'll hopefully behave in a certain way. But I think my better self is waiting for me, even in the next couple hours. And I'm not sure I'd get to that better self if I didn't have HaKadosh Baruch Hu's guidance and his direction. And I feel, and I've told you this before, if you told me there's no Olam Haba, it wouldn't make a difference. I don't see the life of an Oved Hashem as anything, ironically, but empowering you to lead your life the best way. And if you told me that it ended after Me'av Asim Shana, I wouldn't change anything, because I think this is a better me and this is the better life I'd like to lead. And that's what really hit me when I was in yeshiva, when I was your age. That's what really transformed me. I just saw it's not about stifling and suffocating and suppressing your interests in this world just to punch your ticket to the next world. It's about building heaven on this world and then taking it with you to the next world, because this is the world and the optimization of the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants for us. Okay. Laila Tov, Erev Tov, everyone.
Thank you,
Rabbi. See, some good dinner getting ready. It's been a long 15 minutes getting dinner ready, so hopefully it'll be tasty. What's it tonight? A falafel?
No, it's a pizza.
Wednesday's pizza?